Exertion number 11938, reel 54.
Mr. G. Eyston, reel 54. What was the demob procedure, Mr. Eyston?
Well, while I was at Raby, I had a medical with a female doctor, which was strange in those days. And my mum played war about me because I thought I was fit, and for all I was B2. I thought I was anxious to do anything that anybody else could do. I didn't want to be a cripple or anything like that, and I was anxious to do everything that anybody else could do. But my mum played war with me. She said, you know, you've got a long life ahead of you, and you should be getting a pension. But I said, oh, well, that's gone now. I've left where I want to be out, and I'm all right. So, in fact, the pension was the farthest thing from my mind. I never gave it any more thought. And from Raby, I went back to York, to the holding unit at York. And I visited the workshops there once again and had a chat with the ladies, because while I'd been in York, I'd been running the gearbox and back axle department. And it was mainly ladies from York. A lot of workers from Rountree's chocolate factory were there. Including a lot of ATS, and I went back and had a night out with them. They took me around the town, more or less. And on the morning, I think it was Group 27, I think in July of 1946. The following morning, we went along to the, what do they call it, rehabilitation? It had a name, a unit. Was a re-something unit anyway, and it was like a big hangar. I think this one was in Cavalry Barracks. I'd been in Cavalry Barracks, and then the next one up was the four. Names are going. Anyway, this unit was there, which was the demob unit. And you went in with your paybook, handed your paybook in, and they had all the paperwork there, and it was all put together, and then you went through into the, I think the first thing you got was a hat, a trilby hat, and then you were measured for a suit, and you went through and they were shown racks of suits of your size, all stripes. They were nearly all striped suits with turn-ups. I suppose they were. If there hadn't been so many, they would have probably been all right. But I mean, you could pick them out all over town. You could see somewhere you knew it was a demob suit. And I think really the design was reasonable, but there was just so many on the market at that particular time, and they all had the same sort of finish. So the demob suit was known all over the place. And then he got a pair of shoes. I must admit that most of my army stuff had already gone home, so I was very short of my army gear, towels and things like that. They had already been left at home and lost them on the transit down to York. I had to pay for quite a lot of them, but that was beside the point. I mean, they were worth buying.
So if you hand certain equipment in, you had to pay for it?
You had to pay for it, oh yes. Oh yes. Well, I mean, towels, army towels, are worth anybody's money in a sense. Greatcoats, I mean, the army greatcoat, I wore my greatcoat, I should think, for about 15 years when the weather turned bad. I mean, you couldn't get past it, especially if you were on a horse and riding a horse or something like that. You couldn't get past the army greatcoat. Things like that, they'd already been lost. And they'd pay for, oh yes. But that was beside the point. They were cheap. And I think everybody was on the same sort of black market racket, as you might say. I mean, at that time, England was a place of spivs, wasn't it?
Did you have the spears, as you call them, outside waiting to try to...
Yes. They were on the station in particular. You could see them running around. So, you know, well, that's still Sunday. And yeah, it was all the same box, you see. Your own clothes were in a box, and or your own... The uniform you kept, funny enough, I don't know why that was... probably for the, of course you were on reserve, weren't you? I mean, you never out there. I mean, yeah, you come on reserve, so your uniform was in a box, and that came out. It was very useful as well. So you all carried these cardboard boxes with your personal things and bits and pieces in. So you were obvious who you were. Apart from the suit, it was obvious who you were. The hat and the suit, the trilby and the suit. I mean, they were distinguished. Nobody could mistake who you were. So on the station, yes, there was people trying to buy the suits, even buy the suit off you.
You would get underclothing, did you?
You kept your own underclothing, I think.
You got a shirt,
and a tie. Oh yes, you were completely
overcoat.
Kitted out. I don't remember an overcoat. Oh, there was a Mac. Was it a Mac? I think it was a Mac. Yeah. Which again wasn't bad. It wasn't bad value in a sense, but it was just that everybody at that particular time had them. And as I said, I came out in group 27, and 26 had been a massive group. So the stations were full of people in striped suits, as you might say. And it was all done in a day. You went in the morning, and you got a warrant to your home station. And of course, the station was a Barnacastle in those. In that time, while I'd been in Halifax, I'd married a girl from Halifax. I'd met her while I was down there, and we were married. Actually, that was a bit of a catastrophe. I had 72 hours to get married in. I went up on the Friday night. We got married on the Saturday, and I had to go back on the Sunday night. And just before that happened. I'd had a night out in Nottingham with some of the lads, and I'd had a sleep in the bean field on the way home. And I didn't get back before midnight, as I was supposed to. For all nobody suggested I took the stripe off, I wasn't getting paid for it, so I thought, well, that's the end of that. And I took the stripe off and became a private again. And that was with an infantry holding unit in Nottingham, just outside of Nottingham. Bingham, just outside of Nottingham. That was before I went to Ramey.
What was the financial settlement after your army?
Well, I think I finished up with a gratuity of about £35. I'm not quite certain, but I think that's about what... Whether that included my savings, because the army always holds so much money belonging to you, they never give you all the money that you're due to. And I think it came to somewhere in the region of £35. But I can't just swear for that at the moment. I could do if I went upstairs and I look in the book, but...
What happened then with regard to pension and your wounds?
I didn't get anything. I was stupid, I suppose, that I wanted to prove myself in a new life. And... I wasn't going to be held up by a bad leg or anything like that, and I suppose because I was trying to prove myself that I didn't want the pension at that particular time. Of course, later on, in my 50s, things started to tell, and in fact I had to... take myself off one job, really, and I had to drop myself back financially, because climbing ladders up tower cranes, I would suddenly find that I would get arthritis, and I put my foot on the rung of a ladder going up the tower crane, and I'd have to stand there till the pain went, you know, holding myself on my left foot, till the pain went out of my right foot, and then I could complete the climb. And it got so bad eventually that I was going up one foot at a time, which isn't very good for a manager to showing his staff how to climb a ladder in a tower crane to go up with your left foot and then follow up with the right foot and all the way up into Oakley. If you get 200 feet up, it takes quite a bit of doing, and it wasn't quite the style to set. It wasn't an example to set to your staff. So I had to pack the tower crane business in, more or less, because, as I said, I didn't like setting anybody out to do anything that I couldn't do myself. And actually, I lost quite a lot of money over it. And this was really goes back to our wounds. And even today, there are times when I've got to stand like a penguin when I put my foot down and it just won't retaliate in any way. Funny enough, it's the foot that's the problem, and that is probably because it was held in one position while it was in the slings and the weights on.
You've never tried to get a pension later on when
As a matter of fact, I did ask a doctor once when I was having a bad spell. He said, "What do you think about about a pension, doctor?" I said, "That's nothing to do with me." So I never spoke to him anymore. But doctors have changed completely. I mean, there was a time you could go in and discuss your family problems with a doctor, but today, or in recent years, I mean, that's, 10 years ago now, you can't talk to your family doctor over anything, apart from, in fact, he doesn't always ask you what's the matter with you. He just says, "What's your trouble?" And seldom does he look at you, never mind anything else. It's most disappointing.
Did you continue with the regiment after the war?
Well, after at Suez, which is what, 56, was it? I think it was 1956. When the Suez crisis came on, when we tried to take the Suez back into ownership again, when Nasser decided that he wanted it, I had the choice. I don't know whether I had the choice or not, but I was recalled to Rimi. And I didn't fancy that anyway. So I was given the opportunity of going to the TA again. And I went back to the 6th Battalion of the Durham Light Infantry. And I went back as a corporal on the machine guns. And for 8 years, I was made for sergeant that same year. And then I stayed there 8 years as a sergeant of the machine gun platoon. And for one spell, I had Dickie Miller, who was the son of Colonel Miller, as a platoon commander. But he was working away most of the time, so in fact, most of the time, I was platoon commander of the machine gun platoon. And we had a good time. We had a very good crew. We won the Queen's Cup 4 years out of five. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the three in a row. But 4 years out of five, we won the Queen's Cup for the machine gun shoot. I had a very good crew. They came from Middleton and Teesdale, Walsingham, all around Barnacastle, Staindrop, Gainford. And the headquarters were in Bishop Auckland. The battalion headquarters and the company headquarters were in Bishop Auckland. And at Barnacastle, we just had, funny enough, we had the PSI of S Company and also the CSM of S Company. So we were pretty well set, the three of us, for running S Company in a sense. And we had a good time. Then, unfortunately, I was away from home so much, travelling up and down the country, that I had to back out. And Major Bartram, who had taken over command of S Company at that time, he did come out to see if I would go back as CSM for S Company, but with not being home much. If I'm doing something, I like to do it. I can't half and half. If I'm doing something, it's got to be done the way I want it doing. I can't sort of do it. I regret it now because later I met an Artisifer CSM for a warrant officer Artisifer from Remy, and he only went three times a year. So I do regret not having kept on as CSM. Of course, it would have been finished now because the 6th Battalion was finished and there's now only the 7th Light Infantry. But I do regret not having carried on now. But at that time, I couldn't see any real future for me doing it. But I really enjoyed the TA. It was every weekend in those days. And we did the 3 years running, we did the Z reservists, they came in and we had them for a fortnight. We indoctrinated them, you know, we took all the particulars out, set them off, and we built the battalion around them, or they built a battalion around us, I should say. And for 2 weeks of each of these 3 years, we had a full battalion, more or less. Good fun.
Looking back over the whole of your war service, what was your worst moment?
I think the one that will always stick in my mind was the first one of Arras, because everything was fresh, it was new to me, and it will always be clearest in my mind, I think. Everybody in the Durham Brigade will mention Marath, which wasn't pleasant. We had a very nasty deal once with the Greeks. We took a company down in Alamein to the Greek brigade, and we had a very bad deal there. They weren't trained in our style, in a sense. It was rather, they'd been trained slightly different to the way we are. In fact, they were more guerrilla type, and they didn't sort of really have the knowledge. Colonel Batterskins was a bad one. The attack at Alamein.
What are your best memories of your army career?
4 days in Sidi Bish. yeah, that was a wild 4 days. I don't know. We had some good sports days. I was a keen runner, and we had some good days. In Cyprus, we had some good days on the motorbikes with the touring the hills in Cyprus. A lot of good times. A lot of good times. And you know, as I've said many times, a soldier sort of remembers the better times than he does the bad ones. I think a real experience was going into Tunisia after the desert, and going into Tunisia. I think that was great. And there's also a time that I was amazed at the work that Mussolini had actually put into Tripolitania. The way he founded these little cooperatives, and the little cooperative would have the little tractors and everything that a farmer would require. And coming from a small holding type or a small farm, that did strike me. Or Durban. Durban was terrific for the time we were there.
What about comradeship?
Well, that goes, doesn't it? I mean, once you've been in a battle with somebody, it's seldom that you really forget. The name might not come forward straight away, but I mean, George Adams, who was with me in Gazala and then back to Tobruk, I will always remember. Paddy, after all, I was a bit jealous of him being made a sergeant when Remy was formed. The sergeant fitter, Robertson, the bandsman from Crook. Nance Corporal James, also a bandsman, he was an ambulance stretcher bearer corporal. Most of the band, because I travelled around with the band quite a lot doing concert parties and things in the early days. Eric Short, the later MTO, the last MTO, I'll always think of him. And I think of little Dickie Dennis finishing up on the minefield because he got himself drunk and I wanted to get him off. There are lots of them that you think about, but the names don't always come forward straight away. Tommy Buff was a great mate, and I haven't heard of him since the war finished. He did write my mother a lovely letter when I went when I smashed up in Sicily. Peter Jeffries, of course, I'll always remember, and his wife wrote a lovely letter to my mum. Mickey Ferns doing his dinner party for him in Lytton Cheney, not Lytton Cheney, Winkley Kingham.
Who was the best soldier you served with out of all that you've named?
I wouldn't say that because there are so many that I wouldn't like to pick one of them out as the best. Maurice Kirby was a good soldier, a bastard but a good soldier. Bill Watson was a good soldier, Colonel Bill Watson. Again, petty man, as I've said many a time, but a good soldier. Oh, I think as a soldier, there's only one, yes, Peter Jeffries. He was soldier from his hair to his toes. And at that time, it was his life. There was nothing else in his life but soldiering. He was married, and he thought a lot of his wife, but he was a soldier from top to bottom. And I'm disappointed that he didn't go further than he did. I mean, he did do Brigadier, but I think, I don't know why, he didn't go much further than that.